GNU's Morning Magazine for Monday, April 26th. I'm Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Families gathered in East Boulder Sunday to call attention to gun violence and the work being done to prevent it.
We can't change what we're not willing to confront.
Opponents of local government participation in development of trails and an underpass at the former Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant site say they will continue pointing out the possible health dangers.
They had no study session. They held no vote.
And conservation groups have jumped into the legal battle over President Joe Biden's pause on the sale of oil and gas leases on public lands. More coming up. Finally, Miriam Schiff shares a preview of this afternoon's Metro show, airing at 3 p.m., when she interviews author Benjamin Teitelbaum.
This is a study of intellectual history masquerading as a political thriller.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the latest Jim Hightower commentary just after the BBC headlines, and then it's a public affair. Today's show is hosted by the Community Foundation Boulder County, exploring the long road to healing following the King super shooting in Boulder last month. As always, on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. But first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
People of color are still being inoculated against COVID-19 at a slower rate than their white peers 4 months into Colorado's mass vaccination campaign. The lower rate occurs despite state health officials' repeated assurances that they're prioritizing equity in distributing the shots. The Denver Post reports that the racial disparity in vaccinations remains largest among the Latinx population. Only 9% of Latinx Coloradans had received immunizations as of Thursday, despite making up almost 22% of the state's population. About 2.5% of black Coloradans had received the vaccine, even though they make up almost 4% of the population. The persisting racial gap in vaccinations is significant, as black and Latino Coloradans have faced high rates of sickness and deaths from the coronavirus. And while it's only been 3 weeks since COVID-19 vaccines became available to everyone 16 and older, public health experts said the disparities are not only due to who was first allowed to receive the shots, but also because of existing barriers to health care. In Boulder County, 56 new coronavirus cases were reported yesterday with no new deaths. Currently, there should be no problems for those in Colorado wanting to get vaccinated against COVID-19. Demand for vaccines appears to have dropped off, opening up thousands of appointments for those wanting to be inoculated. A spokesperson for SCL Health told the Denver Channel it's experiencing lower demand for the vaccine than their supply. SCL Health currently has hundreds of vaccine appointments available at its community clinics. Nearly 100 detainees currently housed at the privately owned immigration detention facility in Aurora have tested positive for COVID-19. Congressmember Jason Crow's office released the figures in a weekly accountability report. The individuals who have tested positive are new arrivals from the border transferred into the Aurora facility and are not among those detained by the U.S. Marshals Service, according to Crow's office. Meanwhile, the latest COVID-19 vaccination rates show that in areas of the state that voted for Donald Trump, they're lower. The Gazette examined vaccinations in zip codes combined with election results. The data shows that where the former president received a majority of the votes, about 35% of the population are either partially or fully vaccinated, compared to 45% where Biden won. On Friday, the state agency working on a front-range passenger railway system voted to support a route that could boost a long-delayed train to Boulder. The Southwest Chief and Front Range Passenger Rail Commission is recommending a plan including Boulder and Longmont that would use a shared corridor northwest from Denver. Both the larger Front Range Regional Rail Plan and RTD's long-delayed extension of the B-Line commuter rail to Boulder County are still years from happening. The Denver Post reports that earlier this month, RTD's board signaled its support for restarting the plans for the B-Line extension from Westminster, Boulder, and Longmont. The move came in response to pressure from Governor Jared Polis and other Northwest Metro elected officials to finish the line, as promised when voters approved the Fast Tracks plan in 2004. The U.S. Census Bureau is scheduled to release state population data this afternoon. The figures are used to determine how many congressional delegates and electoral votes in presidential elections each state gets. The Colorado Sun reports that most projections show the state will gain one seat, which would result in Colorado having 8 members in the House of Representatives. Texas is likely to gain 3 and Florida 2. California, New York, and a handful of other states are expected to lose seats. The Boulder County District Attorney's Office has created a domestic violence response team. The Daily Camera reports that the team will establish contact with victims sooner in the process to help prosecute cases and provide survivors with protection and resources. The response group comes in the wake of an increase in domestic violence cases during the pandemic. D.A. Michael Doherty said the primary goal of the team will be to establish face-to-face contact with victims within 48 hours of the arrest of a perpetrator. In prior years, victims would talk to police and detectives, but might not be able to immediately see a prosecutor. Doherty's office has used money from a grant to hire a new deputy district attorney and a new investigator to serve on the team alongside another lawyer in the office. The Aurora Police Department will no longer investigate its own officers' shootings and will instead allow other law enforcement agencies to lead those inquiries. Aurora Police will join the multi-agency teams of the 17th and 18th Judicial Districts, which both include Aurora. That means that the next shooting by an Aurora police officer will be investigated by police from other agencies in those jurisdictions. The Denver Post reports that the new partnership replaces an agreement between Aurora and Denver police that allowed the two agencies to investigate their own shootings. That agreement came under scrutiny after outside consultants determined that an Aurora investigation into the death of Elijah McClain at the hands of Aurora officers was deeply flawed. The consultants hired by the city found that the detectives stretched the record to exonerate the officers and asked leading questions. Denver Police Chief Paul Pazin said Friday that his department is also considering a new way of investigating police shootings, but he would not give specifics about the new arrangement because it's not yet final. In the day's weather, it will be mostly sunny with highs in the upper 70s and breezy with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow will be cooler with highs in the upper 50s and showers likely, especially in the afternoon and into the night. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Moms Demand Action, the East Boulder chapter, gathered over the weekend to build momentum around the passage of gun safety measures like universal background checks, a ban on high-capacity weapons, and legislation to disarm domestic abusers. Advocates and their families came together in Cottonwood Park in Louisville to hear from speakers including Maisha Fields, a Denver gun sense activist with the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence.
My name is Maisha Fields, and I am the vice president of organizing for Brady. And the way I came to this fight was laying in a crib. My daughter, I just had her. And my husband kept saying, it's time to get her out of the bed. It's time for her to sleep in this beautiful room that you made me paint. You made me put this crib together. You made me buy this expensive rocking chair that you never sit in. It's time for her to go to her own room. And so I said, okay. And so it didn't work. And my daughter, Nyla, just cried all night long because she wanted to be next to me. So I got into the bed with her. I got into the crib. I don't know if anybody's ever done that. Anybody slept in a crib before? It's very uncomfortable. So I'm in the crib. I'm breastfeeding. She's quiet. I'm like, okay, maybe this may work for a couple weeks. She's in the crib. And all of a sudden, I get a call from my mother. And my mother called. It's 3 a.m. I'm in California. I'm working as a nurse. And my mother says, they killed your brother. And I said, what? My brother, a graduate from Colorado State University, who had only graduated 15 days ago. I said, "What? This? I'm thinking it's a dream, you know, because I'm sleeping in a crib." And I said, "Mommy, just give me a minute." I climb out the crib, like literally, trying to keep the baby asleep. I said, "Mommy, what are you talking?" She says, "The police are here. They just knocked at my door. And they told me they killed your brother." And in those moments, it's so unreal. It's so unreal. My brother was shot in relation to seeing a mass shooting at a park. Just like this. There was a concert in the park in the summer. Families there. Kids playing. Music going. He witnessed 7 people be shot. And they murdered him because he was willing to say, "I saw what happened." We're all here today. It's beautiful outside. We're from Colorado. We know the weather goes up and down. We just came through COVID. And the only thing I can remember about COVID and why I felt safe was because there were no mass shootings. In the whole month of March, we had no mass shootings. We saw a decline in community violence, but we also saw an uptick of women who were being murdered because of domestic violence. We can't change what we're not willing to confront. And so what we must confront is the fact that we have a problem, a very strong problem with our relationship with guns. And specifically assault weapons. Specifically assault weapons. We have a problem with guns and an unhealthy relationship with them. We have a problem that we don't have elected officials who are willing to be courageous. We need elected officials who are willing to say, "I believe in assault weapon ban." We need elected officials who are willing to say, "Enough is enough." I want everyone to say, "Enough is enough."
Enough is enough.
Louder, "Enough is enough."
Enough is enough.
All the way back there, I want you to say, "Enough is enough."
Enough is enough.
We have the power to end gun violence in this lifetime. For each and every one of our babies who have to go to school and have a lockdown drill. What is going on? We vote these people in office. They work for us. And the number 2 public health agenda that we have in the United States of America after COVID, guess what it is? Gun violence. Over 100 people die every day, but 391 are shot. 391 people are shot. And so I want everyone to know today, I may have been crawling up out of a crib and have had to come into this club, which no one wants to be a part of. No one wants to join the survivor movement, because no mother should ever have to bury their child. No father should ever have to bury their child. But we are here. And because we're here, we're going to fight. We're going to fight. We're going to fight from state to state, 51 states, every city, every county. We are going to make sure that this is the number 1 public health issue that our leaders lead on. And so with that, I want everyone to put your fist up in the air and say, "When we fight, we win." Let me hear you say, "When we fight,
we win."
When we fight,
we win.
When we fight.
That was Myesha Fields with the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. She spoke Sunday during an event hosted by Moms Demand Action. Local government leaders say they've approved construction of trail crossings at the former Rocky Flats Wildlife Refuge to make it safer for users. But opponents wonder how it can ever be safe when it was the site of plutonium trigger production for 37 years. KGNU's Roz Brown has more.
Public engagement is the cornerstone of local government, but when Boulder and Boulder County agreed to fund construction of two trail crossings at Rocky Flats National Wildlife Refuge, the public was shut out. Opponents are concerned about remaining contamination at the site and what it might do to users' health, given it's the former site of the Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant. Despite receiving hundreds of written comments in opposition to the project, the public was not allowed to speak before the Boulder County Commissioners or the Boulder City Council. Both boards argued that they felt compelled to honor intergovernmental agreements made before their time in office. Chris Alred with the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center says the group had requested that the city council devote a study session to the issue.
But they had no study session, they held no vote, and they held no public hearing, despite the fact that they received 119 emails demanding a balanced study session and a sign-on letter opposing the Rocky Mountain Greenway, signed on by two elected officials, 61 organizations nationwide, and 322 individuals. So there's very clearly interest from the public to revisit this topic.
The Rocky Mountain Greenway project, which is already partially built, will connect existing trails and build new ones to create a continuous path. Boulder and Boulder County were asked to approve funding for an underpass beneath State Highway 128 and an overpass over Indiana Street. Boulder City Council proceeded with approval without a new vote. The commissioners did vote, approving the agreement 2-1, with Marta Lochteman and Claire Levy in favor and Matt Jones opposed. Jones, acknowledging staff's presentation showing contamination at the site is low, said he still had concerns.
The standards are being met, but those standards are hypothetical, and I just don't want to be promoting use out there. I mean, an Fish and Wildlife Service can do what they want to do. I just don't want to be part of promoting it.
Jones explained that his opposition was also personal.
I keep thinking about the health risks, and I know we had explanations how low they are. I guess my life experience kicks in here, and that is I'm a double cancer survivor. The first I got at 25, and it was thyroid cancer, which is primarily caused by radiation. I could not tell you where that radiation came from, that exposure, if it was that. You just don't know.
Rocky Flats is located 10 miles south of Boulder. The nuclear weapons plant once located there produced plutonium triggers from 1952 to 1989. After a decade-long $7 billion cleanup removed 21 tons of nuclear material from the site, it was open for recreation in 2018, although 1,300 acres of the 6,200-acre site remain off-limits as a Superfund site. Alred applauded Jones for his vote, but says both boards failed their constituents.
We're going to keep working on public education on the issue, and it's a severe injustice what happened here to subvert democracy and shut out the public voice. The council and commissioners know well from all of the feedback they've received that there are concerns in the community. There are legitimate concerns from scientists and experts in the field who don't have conflicts of interest with the Department of Energy. The presentations that they heard were one-sided. So we're going to continue to make it public the way that our government is operating to shut out any public involvement. And we will continue to hold our government accountable to the people.
Meanwhile, Physicians for Social Responsibility and the Rocky Flats Technical Group have sent a letter to Boulder City Council asking them to reconsider support for the Greenway. Allard says the city has been asked to respond by May 3rd. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
Conservation groups are joining the fray after 14 states mounted legal challenges against the Biden administration's pause on the sale of oil and gas leases on public lands. The administration is reviewing the program to determine if leasing unfairly benefited companies over taxpayers and the need to mitigate climate change. Eric Galatis of Public News Service files this report.
A legal battle is unfolding over the Biden administration's pause on oil and gas lease sales on public lands. Industry groups filed lawsuits to block the move in federal court, and last week, 21 farmers, ranchers, conservation, recreation, and tribal groups countered with a suit defending the administration's efforts to determine if leasing unfairly benefited companies over taxpayers and the need to mitigate climate change. Eric Huber with the Sierra Club Environmental Law Program says fossil fuel development on public lands is a major contributor of climate pollution.
So roughly a quarter of the United States' contribution to greenhouse gases that cause climate change are coming from oil and gas and coal and other things coming from our public lands.
Conservationists say the pause is also a necessary step toward addressing the disproportionate health impacts from air pollution on low-income and communities of color. Opponents claim the move will lead to job loss and hurt state and local economies. 13 states also filed suit in a Louisiana federal court, arguing regular lease sales are required by law. The administration's pause to review the leasing program does not affect the oil and gas industry's current stockpile of some 13 million acres of public land leases, many purchased for as little as $2 an acre. Huber says the pause for new leases will not disrupt current fossil fuel production.
The industry has thousands of leases already locked up, so there's not going to be an immediate effect in terms of loss of jobs or stopping any ongoing fracking.
Huber says oil and gas leasing also prevents other uses on lands owned by all Americans, including recreation, tourism, and other sustainable economies he believes benefit communities far more in the long run. The Biden administration is expected to release an interim report on its review of the leasing program this summer. I'm Eric Galatis.
On today's Metro Show at 3 p.m., host Miriam Schiff interviews Benjamin Teitelbaum, author of the book War for Eternity, inside Bannon's far-right circle of global power brokers. Here's a preview of that upcoming conversation.
Why do you write this way? Because the book reads like, when I was reading it, it's a mystery page turner, and it is also filled with research. Why do you write this way?
I wanted to bring as wide an audience into this world as possible. And I had the benefit of having actual stories to tell that were dramatic and could fuel a sort of mystery book kind of format for this particular story. But it is deep. What I often tell a lot of my friends is that this is a study of intellectual history masquerading as a political thriller. If I can introduce people to new ways of thinking about politics and ideas without them really ever feeling like they're having a professor lecture to them, then I've done something that hopefully is beneficial and I also find exciting.
You use traditionalism when talking about the foundation of the ideology of the power brokers and not fascism. Why do you use traditionalism?
So the whole impetus to the book was that I discovered that Steve Bannon, Trump's former advisor, was in some way interested in / affiliated with an ideological school that called itself traditionalism, capital T. It's very eccentric for most of its life. It hasn't had anything to do with politics. It's been about spirituality. You would find this stuff rather in a New Age bookstore, let's say, than the political science section of a university library. And that interested me, but it is also so far outside the bounds of what we normally think of in political thought that you actually find this stuff, this traditionalism, and we can go into it if you'd like to, it almost appears beyond fascism.
More on that coming up at 3 p.m. today on KGNU's Metro Show with Miriam Schiff. Thank you for joining us on today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young.